This episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club is brought to you by our wonderful supporters on Patreon. Your support really means a lot to us, and we wouldn't be able to make this community what it is without you. So a special thank you shout out to Pat the Trophy Hunter, KingK6969, Against Me, Jordan Vickers, Gary Cooper, Diego Juan, First Mage, Super Hans, Ben Khan, CJ, Chaz Bilby, and Rob Stevens. If you're interested in supporting any of the shows in the Trophy Talk Network, like the Trophy Talk Podcast, the PlayStation Plus Game Club, the Moogle Cast, and Surviving the Horror, go to patreon.com/Trophy Talk Network. And for now, enjoy the show. What's up, internet friends, and welcome to another episode of the PlayStation Plus Game Club. I am your host, Kevin Garavente, a.k.a. the Portland Kevin, and like a book club, we pick one game from the PlayStation Plus Extra Library and talk about it way too much. This time, we are talking about Sword of the Sea, developed and published by Giant Squid in July earlier this year. In the game, you control a wraith who rides a sword like a surfboard as you sail across a fantastical desert wasteland and bring the water and natural beauty back to the area. Traveling through this magical game, and with me today, we have one of the co-hosts of the Moogle Cast, Maximum Carnage, a.k.a. Max. Welcome back to the Game Club.
It's been a while, Kevin, man. How are you doing, man? It feels so good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. It has been a very long time. I think the last time you were here was when we were talking about Curse to Golf way back in January.
I still think about that game sometimes, man. It's such a fun gameplay loop.
Yeah. Yeah, it was so fun to just like casually go through that game. That was one of the best roguelikes that I've ever played. I loved it. So again, thank you for recommending it. It is a great game. Anybody listening, if you haven't played Curse to Golf, go on to PlayStation Plus and try it out. It's great. But also we have from the Discord, first time in the Game Club, is the Sly G Cooper, a.k.a. Gary. Welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. I saw that earlier when we put up the vote for, like, what is our like, quarterly game vote gonna win, like, which game is gonna win this vote, you had voted for Sword of the Sea, so I approached you and I said, like, hey, man, like, do you want to be on the show to talk about this? I'm glad you found some time to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So before we jump into talking about Sword of the Sea, Max, do you want to let us know what's coming up for MoogleCast?
Yeah, so you're making the rounds across the Trophy Talk Network, my guy.
I am.
Slow down, because you're joining us on
he's on taking over. Watch out, Colin.
I told you, you're our secret weapon. But yes, you will be joining us for MoogleCast in November. We're going to be talking all about BioShock.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be an exciting one. I've got ideas of what we should discuss, like things that will fill at least two episodes worth of content. So there's so much that we could talk about regarding BioShock, and I can't wait.
Same here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Gary, is there anything you want to plug right now, either your own projects or just things, interesting things you've seen online that you want to like get people to watch or listen to?
I mean, other than the fact that I'm back on the Platinum Achievements podcast with
back on the Platychieves. Let's go.
With Smackerly, aka Ray, which that episode will be coming out soon. Go check that out. It's on YouTube. I think it's on Spotify still. It's basically just 2 hours of guys rambling about video games. It doesn't get any better than that, right?
Nice. Yeah.
You know?
So, that's what you're listening to right now.
Yeah, exactly. So check that out. I mean, check out the Trophy Talk Discord if you're a trophy hunter. I mean, obviously that's kind of what brings people to this current podcast. I've been there since the beginning, and it's an awesome community.
It really is.
That's pretty much all I got.
Yeah. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. you know, this podcast wouldn't be what it is without that community. Like we do pull a lot of people in from that, and I try and get a lot of like engagement there. So mm-hmm. I really have to thank you for being part of that community. But if you're interested in joining the Trophy Talk Discord, you can find us on Discord. You can also just follow a link that goes through the Trophy Talk podcast. Also, the Moogle Cast and Surviving the Horror, all three of those other shows are fantastic. And, you know, I'm really glad that the Game Club can be part of that too. Relating to sort of the Discord, before we start talking about Sword of the Sea in proper, I want to do a couple of plat shout outs coming in from the Discord. So we do have like Gary, you platinum this game. You sent in your image of the platinum trophy. So thanks for playing along with us. Yep. That was another reason I wanted to have you on the show. And we had Faux Rambo write in, and he just sent in his like write up from when he got the platinum trophy way back in, I think it was August. But he said, "I may have overhyped this one for myself a bit. It was cool and I had a good time, but it didn't wow me as much as I'd hoped. I've loved Journey, but never played The Pathless, so maybe I didn't have my expectations calibrated. Anyway, the speed run was fun. The collectible hunt got a little old, and the unskippable cutscenes I had to watch to retry the last boss for the untouchable trophy sucked. Solid game, and glad I got to experience it through PS Plus, but I'd probably wait for a sale otherwise." So a lot to dive into there. I'll probably reference what he wrote about as we talk through the game properly. But yeah, a lot of this, just, you know, as we start discussing the Sword of the Sea, your first impressions, your general impressions. Gary, let's start with you. Like, what was your first impression of this game?
So my experience is kind of a weird one. So I jumped in, as you guys probably know, that I've kind of been bouncing back and forth all freaking year long for achievement hunting, trophy hunting. Should I not? I'm kind of, you know, bipolar about it. But when I first started playing it, when it came to the service, I think it was in like the beginning of September or something like that when I first started playing it. But I was following a collectible guide just to knock that out. And it kind of felt like a drag because I would sit there every 10 seconds, watch part of the video, play it. You know, it kind of took me out of the experience. So about halfway through the game, my brain's like, you know what? I'm going to turn off trophy notifications. I just want to play the game and experience it for what it is. And that definitely enhanced my experience. Like playing the rest of the game, it felt like, you know, it was kind of it's between the, you know, the graphics and the music and everything. It was kind of a beautiful experience. But I did end up going back when you mentioned this, that you're doing this to get go for the platinum.
Yeah.
My thoughts kind of mirror his. Kind of a lot of collectibles. The unskippable cutscenes are a questionable decision on the developers. Yeah, I don't know why they decided to throw in that not taking damage from the last boss trophy. It didn't take me that long, but it was pretty annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, overall, I think it's a great little experience. I don't think it's quite as good as Journey, but it's definitely, mm-hmm. you know, got a unique vibe to it. And between the combination of the graphics and the music, it's definitely up there for one of those, kind of art as an experience gaming wise, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Max, how about you? How about your first impression of this?
It's going to sound like a weird opener, but I will be referring to this game as a game, but I want to start by emphasizing that Sword of the Sea is an interactive experience more than it is a game.
Yeah.
So like in film, there exists this style of film genre called art house. I would refer to Sword of the Sea as an art house game, like through and through. It is flowing with creativity, and that flow translates in both its visual content with its streams of flying fish and shape-shifting landscapes, and and to its gameplay with swords, you know, sword surfing, skateboard, like tricks used to traverse the vistas. I think the use of the sword in the game is pretty thought-provoking. Like, we often see the sword used in media and throughout history as like a symbol for many things, including like knighting and wars, etc. But of course, it is the weapon used to bring death upon a life. And in this game, the sword is used to bring life into a world that is seen as dry, withered, and dead. And I just thought that was kind of clever.
That's a fascinating point. I hadn't really thought about that, but wow, yeah. Like, way to start us off with some really thought-provoking ideas.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I never even thought about that, actually, until now.
It's like, all right, we are riding a sword and bringing life back to the world. Wow.
Yeah.
I love that. That's amazing. So, as far as my first impression goes for it, I felt like this was, like, as you said, kind of like a very much like an art house kind of game where you're just meant to experience it. And when it comes to any of these games that are made by Giant Squid or these guys who started Giant Squid, they came from the developer called That Game Company. And That Game Company made Journey. And before that, they made Flower. Before that, they made Flow. And all of those games, they feel less like a game and more like an art piece where you're just there to experience it, and you can see as far as like how much content it has. It is meant to be something that is like an experience that doesn't really have the hallmarks of it being a game per se, but they have gameplay in it. Like, you are doing something that changes something else in the world. It's just that I remember, like, way back in the day with when Flower was about to come out and people were talking about how, is this a game? And a couple of guys that were on a podcast that I was listening to way back in 2010 were saying, like, well, yes, it is still technically a game. You are controlling something and you are changing something in the area that you are controlling. So, you know, it is technically a game still, but it is an art piece that has you supposed to be, you're supposed to be feeling something new and not necessarily like overcoming something or like defeating something. So this is definitely an art piece that is not necessarily like a video game as you would see conventionally these days. It's very fascinating. But we should talk about the presentation first and foremost, because this is like the biggest thing that you could point to saying it is an art piece. So we've got a specific style to this that feels very much like Journey, where you have a mysterious character that is sort of traveling across a desert area with a lot of sand. And it is supposed to be very picturesque. It has like giant vistas that you sail through and like ride your sword like a surfboard, and you're just supposed to like take this all in as far as like the scenery goes. Was there anything that really struck you as far as the art style?
It's hard to put my finger on it, but it's kind of a unique art style all on its own. It's very, how do I put it, because it's not cartoony and it's not realistic. It's kind of like its own thing. It's the way that they, I don't know, how do I explain it? So the way that like Max brought it up earlier, where you're changing the landscape, you know, with your sword, like there's essentially little areas all over each map. And when you interact with it, it'll basically spread water all over that area. And I thought like those instances were absolutely gorgeous. Like the way that they portrayed that and like the, I guess the water physics and everything, it just, it's kind of like an a league of its own.
Yeah,
I've always been a sucker for water in video games. I know that kind of sounds weird, but like it's always been like my like how does the water look in this game, you know? It's like one of those weird little like it's definitely up there as like probably top 10 for me for for how beautiful the, you know, the water and the water physics and everything is in that game. And I've always been a sucker also for like kind of like, I guess example that comes to mind is like in Mario what is it called, Mario Sunshine, when you're, you know, turning something from dark to light, like you're basically cleaning up the environment. That was a very satisfying mechanic for me.
Like, oh yeah, yeah.
And it's just the way that they portray it too, which is, it's gorgeous. Like,
yeah,
you know,
when you brought up the water physics, I found it very fascinating that as the game starts, you can see that they have taken what, like the water physics, like the engine that drives that, and applied it to the sand. And now the sand dunes are flowing like they're waves of water.
Yep.
And even that's something
even the snow was like that too. Like it's almost I really like that actually.
that was like fascinating to see I saw that and I thought to myself, the tech that they used for that was that was just like a very interesting way to apply water physics to something that's not water. And I was blown away. I was like, okay, this is going to be really interesting because I've never seen sand do this in a game. This is really cool. So, Max, like, as far as the art style goes, like when you're talking about it being like an art house kind of game, like what was it that struck you about that?
It's hard to really pinpoint like what is striking about this game, because I feel like it shares, it's like every aspect of it, like evenly across the board. So nothing overly sticks out. But
yeah,
I honestly don't know. Talking about visuals is a little bit tough for me. I get the sense, like when I started playing this game, the sense I was getting, it felt calm to play. There was nothing intense. Nothing was, you know, overshadowing or being overshadowed. It was just a really relaxing game to play, just visually. Perfect before bed. I really struggled with this question.
No, that's fine. And like you saying that like there's nothing that is like threatening to you, and like that kind of just allows the player to really explore the area and like really take it all in at their leisure.
Unlike, I can explain it a bit better in the favorite moments section, but yeah.
Oh yeah. But like unlike their past games, like in Journey or Flower, like occasionally there is something that is a threat to you. Like in Journey, there were those giant ribbon snakes thing that were coming after your character starting about halfway through the game. But like in like Flower, you're like trying to get your flower petals to avoid being electrocuted by some structure or something. But in this game, a threat doesn't really come into play until the very end of the game. And you don't ever like have any dire moments at any point in this game. So it's very much like a calm experience. And I feel like the art style plays into that, but also the music. And I did want to ask both of you about the music. Like the music is very distinct in this game. It feels very much like Journey. And, you know, I have to, you know, credit the audio director, Austin Wintory, who has worked with the art director, Matt Nava, about like on this game and all of their previous games. They have worked together since they were both working with that game company. So they have been working together for a long time. That the music and the art style kind of go hand in hand when it comes to these games, because they pair really well together. Was there anything about the music specifically that you think like created that feeling of calmness?
Yeah, I feel the music for this game suits the vibe. It is aiming for with the almost Sorry. I feel I've been writing things on my phone and I've just like spell checking and it's throwing me off. I feel the music for this game suits the vibe it's aiming for, with the almost God of War like baritone choirs for these like massive like tombs, etc. Yeah. Whilst I feel the music has achieved its goal, I do also feel that it's probably one of the least memorable aspects of the game. But it could also be that it's intended to work in tandem with the rest of the game's elements, like I was saying before, where nothing is overshadowing or being overshadowed. I did 3 playthroughs of this game. Naturally, the speed run was my last trophy and playthrough. And at this point, I experienced the game and was ready to move on. So I turned the in-game music off for my speed run. I ended up playing the game, listening to some really old school Black Sabbath, and I got to admit,
a whole different vibe.
I got to admit, something about the psychedelic nature of those mid-70s records really breathed like a new energy into this game. Like suddenly I'm feeling more satisfaction in like smooth free-flowing tricks and in the time to the music. It was interesting, like how taking away an aspect of this game and replacing it with something foreign completely changed my experience. But yeah, I guess it is a little bit blasphemous. Sorry, Gary.
I'm surprised you didn't put on like the Tony Hawk soundtrack or something.
I think that would have been overkill. You know,
busting out tricks.
Well, that is wild. Oh my god. Well, yeah, relating to that, like we haven't touched on the general gameplay of this. Like, yes, you are sailing, you are riding a sword, like a surfboard, across this desert area. And anytime you catch air, you can pull off tricks, like in Tony Hawk. So, the general gameplay idea or the loop of this is that, like, you reach certain points and you return water to the land. There are animals that typically would be swimming in the water that are flying through the air now, and they're just kind of floating around the area. But as you're doing this, anytime you catch air, you can like crest off a big wave of sand or water, and or you can find like structures that are built like half pipes that are meant for you to do tricks in. You can pull off tricks like in Tony Hawk. So were you playing this more as like an exploratory game like Journey, or like jumping in and just doing tricks whenever you had the chance, as like a Tony Hawk game?
I think the first playthrough, it was just more of a Journey slash like platforming game for me. I wasn't too concerned about the tricks, but then obviously the second playthrough, I went for like the score trophy, and that's when I was just, you know, doing ridiculous tricks that I can definitely do in real life.
Yeah. 1080s.
Yeah.
And that's when the Black Sabbath really kicked in and worked well.
Yeah, well, yeah. That, for my third playthrough, obviously, like, that's when when I was listening to all the psychedelic Black Sabbath, I'm just like, I'm just grooving to the music. All the tricks are like going nicely in time, nothing too overboard. Just like, yeah, jamming there.
Yeah. Gary, how about you? What was your play style the first time?
I would say I kind of touched on it a little bit in my like kind of my brief overview, but I first half of the game, I was pretty casual about everything. I was just kind of exploring. I was following a collectible guide, but I was just kind of taking my time with it and kind of taking everything in. Second half of that playthrough is when I was really kind of like taking it all in, because I wasn't stopping every 10 seconds to look at where the next collectible was. That's honestly where I got most of my enjoyment. Especially, yeah, it's when the music hits and everything. There's certain levels I'll touch on that when we're talking about our favorite moments and all that kind of stuff. But there's certain levels where it's like, oof, I was using headphones too, or, you know,
oh yeah. Yeah.
And it really hits in certain areas with the music and the vibe and everything. So, I was just kind of, for the most part, I was just kind of, cruising around exploring and then, yeah.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. I took the approach of just like wanting to play through it without a guide the first time. And that's usually how I play games. But with this one, it was kind of like, okay, I want to like explore as much as I can. And I would go off and try and find the very edges of the world where I could go. And that's one thing that I like doing with games, especially with this style, where I like to really push the boundaries of where the developers think that I can go. And what was fascinating is that some of those collectibles that are out there that you can find are in those places that I would discover thinking like, I'm not supposed to be here, and then find something that I could gather, like a seashell that you have to pick up. And I'd be like, wow, they actually thought that players should get here.
Yeah. Some of those, and I was like, how would I have ever found this without a guide? I was like, what?
It's like, these spaces are like up where you're like jumping on top of rocks and then like climbing places that don't feel like the developers intended for you to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they did, where they hid like a seashell up there or something.
Yeah.
Pretty like wild that you could get up there. But, let's talk about some of your favorite areas or favorite moments of the game. You've been kind of referencing it a little bit, Gary. Like, what were some of those most memorable moments?
So I think I'll do like top two, top three, whatever. I don't want to, you know, take up too much time, but
yeah.
I think my favorite moment through the whole game, maybe this is a hot take, but the Frozen Drifts level, because there's two levels where you ride animals, and in the Frozen Drifts level, you ride on a shark. And it's obviously it's snowy and everything, but the very beginning, so there's like optional, there's like little optional things you can interact with. Usually it's like a group of like lanterns that you don't necessarily have to interact with all of them. Sometimes they just give you like some of the currency or whatever, but the very beginning of the level, you have to interact with like this little circle of lanterns that opens this door to the rest of the level. And I was using headphones when I was first playing that, and the music was kind of like quiet. There wasn't really much going on, but as soon as you interact with those lanterns and open that door and you just see the entire level, and then this choir hits, and I was just like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, that was like my favorite moment of the entire game. I was like, dude, like, you just, you know, it made me feel something. I'm like, this is awesome. Like,
yeah.
And they just like cruising around on a shark and just like jumping through and activating all these little areas and stuff. And it's just, it's super fun. Like the animal riding levels are some of my favorite moments for sure. I would say the other moment that really stands out, it was kind of an annoying level, but I really liked just the idea behind it, is the, what was it called? It is called, hold on 1 second, Boiling Cavern, the second to last level.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you have to like, it's on the level, the whole level itself is almost like a puzzle in itself.
Especially on
the, because for those who haven't played it, like it's, the entire level is like filled with lava, and there's little objects like boats that have sunk in like little pieces of land that you basically have to like use to try to traverse throughout the level. Otherwise, because if you stand in the lava for too long, you just you die, and then you basically start from where you were last standing. And I thought that was a cool idea, and just the whole level looked awesome. Like the way that they stylized the lava and everything looked cool. I'm not going to lie, at the very, very end, though, I was trying to get through the very end of the level, and I was like, dude, how am I going to do this? This level's huge. I got to get to that tower. And then I kept like trying to jump across everything until I realized that you're supposed to die, technically. Like, I say air quote die, but it's like it basically triggers a cutscene for what happens next. And I was like, okay. But that level is trivial, though. Once you unlock the all the special abilities, you can just fly through it. It basically sucks any challenge out of that level, but like the first playthrough is awesome.
You can't can't actually get to that platform at the end either. It doesn't let you.
No.
Oh, okay. You tried.
It is.
I got there. It was just like, no, invisible wall.
Yeah. Darn.
Speaking of finding boundaries that the developers like intended for you to not get to, but
yeah.
Oh man. Okay. Well, like, That's fascinating you bring up the riding the shark moment, because that reminds me of what Max was saying earlier. And like sharks in most games are like dangerous things that you have to avoid, or like in one game that we talked about on Game Club a couple of years ago was like you get to be the shark and kill everybody else.
Yeah.
But sharks are usually like symbols of death or like big threats. And in this one, the shark is actually like your friend. It is the one creature, one of the two creatures in the game that you get to ride. And it's just fun to like bound around as a shark. They could have picked anything. They could have picked a whale that you could have ridden, or they could have picked like some other fish. But like this symbol of like something that is usually dangerous is actually just another tool for you to use. And it's not destructive. It is, again, restoring life to the world.
Agree.
Yeah.
So, Max, thank you for making me think of that. But, you know, like the animal riding moments are totally cool, because they kind of break up the loop of the gameplay where you're like sailing around and like restoring life or water to the world. But when you're riding the animals, like they can like bash through crystals or walls and stuff. And they're much more bombastic. And the music complements that, as you were saying, but like you can really like reach certain things that are like typically out of reach for your character normally. And it feels like they like engineered these to be much more of a spectacle rather than, you know, be part of like the gameplay loop that you're going through.
Yeah.
I like that didn't like sort of overstay their welcome either. They're quite short levels.
They are short. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the fact that the sense of speed it gives you too. Like once you unlock, I didn't realize how fast I was going until I unlocked a little miles speedometer. An hour. Yeah, I know. Riding the shark, it's like, 800 miles an hour or whatever. I was like, what?
Yeah. It's a speed shark.
Yeah. I know, right? I'm like, crazy.
Yeah. Earlier on, though, like when you get to the dolphin, and the dolphin's the first one that you ride, I thought to myself, well, like, okay, you get to the dolphin statue and you have to light up all of the lanterns that are around it. And once you do that, I thought that it was going to be like a boss that you had to fight or something, because I saw there was like that fight trophy where you have to like fight a boss at the end of the game without taking damage. And I thought like, well, okay, this is the first of the three bosses. And no, you actually just get to ride this one. So this one, that was really cool. And it was a moment that subverted my expectations of what the game was.
Mm-hmm. So, quick side note that I just remembered is you can also, I mean, obviously we all know this, but I guess people who are listening who haven't played it, but there's also random animals that will pop up, like larger animals that will let you like kind of just ride around them. Like they kind of have their own path, and you can just jump on and just kind of like ride along with the path that they're on, like whales and stuff like that too, which is kind of a cool little extra detail that they added. And there's a trophy for each one too. Yeah. That's a bonus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you need some of those to reach some of the collectibles.
Yeah.
Too. Like you have to ride the whale up above some tower and then jump off the whale onto the tower
yep.
to get like the random seashell that's up there. But yeah, Max, dude, what are some of your favorite moments from this game?
Oh, shout out to the Sacred River level, you know, where the one where you've got your buddies riding on the sword with you. When you eventually make it outside and you just see like the beautiful night sky and that sort of walkout moment, getting out of that building and just sort of looking around, it's just like, wow, so many like, different shades of blue is absolutely beautiful. I even said my girlfriend was just on her phone in bed and I was just like, look. She's like, look at it. Pretty. But yeah. Go on.
No, like that, I agree. That was my favorite area too.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I'm kind of torn between two moments though. The first is the walkout moment. It's so like when you see the title Sword of Sea, it's truly, it was a bizarre feeling that I can't quite explain properly, but I'm going to give it a go. The story gave you pretty much nothing at this point, but a teardrop. You don't know what is going on or the business you have in this world. But on the flip side of that, one thing that was very clear was that you need to just go. Like, just go forward, start surfing. You've got a job to do.
Pressure.
Yeah, that's sort of just.
Keep talking. Yeah.
I don't know why that just stuck with me. I was just like, I know what I need to do, but I also don't. It sounds really strange. Do you know what I'm talking about, or is it just me?
I actually like that feeling a lot. Yeah, the game doesn't have any sort of dialogue. It doesn't have. It has almost nothing in the way of instruction that pops up on screen. So you're meant to just kind of discover this as you go. And I'll admit that like, I didn't read anything about this game before I started it. Neither. I just downloaded it and like booted it up and said like, okay, well let's try this. And then after playing it for like half an hour, I did look it up and be like, it's giant squid. Right. And that's when I started to connect the dots about it being from the makers of the Pathless and Journey. And then like I started to make those connections, but right off the bat, I was just thinking like, okay, well this is, I don't know what I'm doing, but man, this is amazing.
Yeah.
So it is something that is supposed to be conveyed to you through feeling and not through any sort of direct instruction. And I really appreciate that about the game. As far as the story goes, you mentioned it briefly and we can talk about it for a few minutes, but it's almost non-existent. And there is like this desert area that is devoid of life, and a single water droplet in a cave falls from the stalactite and drops down onto the statue of the Wraith, and the statue comes to life and then starts to ride the sword. And that's where you start playing. You ride out of the cave and out into the desert where the sand dunes are undulating like waves of water in a storm. It's epic to see. But as you ride across through these levels, you encounter some other being that is like, it looks like another Wraith. And the game doesn't say who this other character is. You might think that they are kind of an antagonist and that you have to like compete against them or something and defeat them, but they turn out to be your friend.
Yeah, they do kind of paint that picture game at the beginning where they're like, uh-oh,
yeah,
you've got to because they make it all mysterious where like they're like watching you for the first like level and a half or two levels, and then like, is this going to be like an enemy that I have to compete with or like fight? Or
yeah.
And then they're like, surprise.
Make you think that. Yeah. Yeah. Or like they're like off in the distance and then they like jump over a cliff or something and disappear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm glad they went that direction though, because like seeing this woman jump in and out of places and just like, I really don't want to fight this person because this isn't the vibe I'm going for.
They even hid the fact that it was a woman at first because they were wearing a mask. And then like towards the end, like I think she helps you and then pulls her mask up and you just see her eyes and he's like, oh,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of a cool moment.
Yeah. I must admit, like she has the same eyes as the, I think the character you play as in The Pathless. I haven't actually played it. I just see the thumbnail for the game.
I wonder if there's any sort of connection.
Hmm.
Yeah,
like loosely or something, you know.
So then we get to eventually the point where she helps you out and meets up with you, and there is like this moment where you sort of awaken this ancient snake god like machine thing or whatever, and it is fire based, and so it like flies off into the air, and then comes back and attacks you at some point halfway through like one of the ice levels, and she helps defend you against this thing, and it, as she was like riding around on her own sword, she puts up her sword and it shatters her sword. So then the two of you ride around together on one shared sword, and that is the whole premise of one of the last levels, the Sacred River that we were talking about earlier. Then, as like you're riding through that area at the very end, she like the snake thing comes back and it confronts the two of you and eats her. And then like you have to like traverse the lava area. That's where like you fall into the lava at some point, and it's scripted that you have to like get killed by the lava, and then your character sort of like goes into this trance and then suddenly gets resurrected, wakes up, and you fight the giant snake thing as you're traveling up this giant tower that is in the middle of the desert area. And after you fight it for a few minutes, you eventually like get her released from the snake's mouth. He's like imprisoned her inside this like orb inside of his mouth. And then you fight him together again as you're both riding the same sword. But the whole time you're fighting him, you're collecting these like water droplets and then sending the water out to it and hitting it with water as it's like shooting fireballs at you and stuff. Mm-hmm. So this is the only sort of like confrontation in the game. But after you defeat it, the Wraith character, your character, like hands her the sword and then falls away into an abyss and then explodes in a flash of light and water. And only after playing it the second time, I realized like, oh, your character, the Wraith, is the spirit of water. Mm. And you are returning water to the whole land. There are like different, like small, like obelisks that you can interact with along the way throughout the whole game that give you messages of like what the lore is of the game. But even that is very abstract. And there is one of them that talks about the war between fire and water and how it's like an eternal battle. And I didn't really get this whole story of like the fight between fire and water until I read that and then saw the fight again. And I was like, oh, okay. So like, this is an artistic depiction of the war between fire and water, I guess. So it was very interesting.
Yeah. I didn't even catch that at the end.
Yeah, the Wraith's death just felt like the saying, the sea gives and the sea takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so like a sort of a metaphor for the sea's mm-hmm. dual nature as a source of life and powerful force of destruction.
Yeah. I thought those cutscenes were like another one of my favorite moments where it's kind of like, I don't necessarily understand what's going on here, but I feel like something is very sad or something is kind of bittersweet. Mm. And I want to understand what this is all about.
Yeah.
But, you know, you guys mentioned it earlier, the final fight against the giant snake, his name is Tor, was it Tornamun?
Tornamun.
And, yeah, it is like
tournament.
Yeah.
Feels like a tournament.
This is like...
It's like when he phases.
Yeah. So, like, you were going for the Platinum Trophy, and there is one trophy that is awarded for fighting him without taking damage. By the way, like, they have patched in a thing where now you don't have to watch that cutscene if you try and restart.
That would have been nice before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Save myself 5 minutes per try.
Jeez. Oh, man.
It's rough.
It took me, like 5 or 6 tries, but I got it eventually.
Yeah. I looked up a few strategies and I found one that worked. It's mostly the freaking lasers in the second phase. That was the hardest part for me. It was just, cause it felt so like random. And then somebody's like, they follow you. So just go to the highest point, come back down and it'll never hit you. And I was like, why didn't the freaking trophy guide say this? Like, come on. Yeah. But after that, it was like, boom.
Yeah, I found a way to deal with the laser. It was the fireballs that come straight down, and they show like a beam of where they're going to land. And for some weird reason, I just could not avoid those. Like I would somehow find my way underneath one of them every time. So, yeah, Max, what about you?
Yeah, boss fight is serviceable, but I agree. I think the half pipe section where Tarnamoon is chasing you is a little bit bullshit. With his like sort of flame like stream attack, just like I don't know about you guys, but I've really struggled to get my guy to like go up, like sort of go up the ramp and then jump away from the ramp. So
the controls kind of felt off for that section.
Like I was fighting the controls. It's like playing Uncharted. I near enough always just like fell back down the ramp into the stream, but like when I was playing the game naturally, I wasn't trying to go for this trophy, but I got quite lucky when I did eventually say, right, okay, time to tackle this apparently bullshit trophy. I got it first time, so
When I was thinking to myself, like when I was fighting him, I was like, okay, well, they're introducing new stuff into the game. And there's a general rule that when you're developing your boss fight for the end of the game, you do not throw in new elements of the game or new actions the player has to take because you're not supposed to be learning something new at the very end. And they break that rule this time. And I think it's okay, but I do agree with you, Max, that it's kind of like, hey, like, this is kind of bullshit. Like we should have been learning this kind of stuff earlier, but also it being like the only confrontation in the game, I understand why they might have to teach you something new. It's just that it's kind of like, I don't feel like I need to be learning something right now at the very end, right before the credits, but
we use plenty of half pipes throughout the game, but we don't use them in that context or that perspective. So the controls feel completely off when you're so used to using half pipes in a different way with different controls. It was almost like fighting muscle memory at that point. You know what I mean? Like, the final phase I thought was pretty easy where as long as you keep moving, you don't really ever get hit and you just have to make sure you watch out for the fire.
Yeah. And having the full pipe was good because he was able to like sort of just constantly just like go right or left and get away from that laser beam. But
I constantly, like anytime that laser showed up, I was like, well, I'm just going to keep going right and looping all the way around. The thing is, though, if I ever stopped and I was halfway, I was like at the very top of that pipe, I'd be upside down. I would get my controls mixed up and I would start to move the wrong direction because it operates like a well shooter where left and right are reversed.
Oh, yeah.
If you're all the way up to the top.
Yeah.
Like left and right are not relative like to the camera.
You have to like keep rotating the stick and like it kind of has to match the direction of the pipe as you're going.
So that was that was annoying.
The random I did think it was kind of random at the end of the boss fight where it was like what is this, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time?
Yeah, I got that vibe.
When you're literally just hitting the ball back and forth, yeah, I was like, this is kind of random. Yeah. Yeah. And the animation felt a little jank in that section too, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
But I know you're talking about like...
I know you're talking about
like new mechanics, but you know, they introduced that as just like, I know what to do. I've done this before.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably why they did it. They're like, everyone's played Ocarina of Time. Like, you know, it's like, I just thought it was kind of random though.
Yeah. The response time for like your hits though, don't really like, they weren't great. And
yeah, the animation was kind of like, weird.
Yeah, I was missing them the first couple of times.
I just mashed square. Like, you know, yeah, that seemed to work but, every time.
That's the thing, though. Like, you can also just mash the X button or the square button, and mm-hmm. it automatically just like takes it for you.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It doesn't feel like that was entirely thought through. Where it's not like you have to wait for the prompt to pop up. You can just start mashing mm-hmm. it right away.
Yeah,
and it doesn't matter. Yeah. So. Like it was still really cool. It felt very epic, but I was just thinking to myself, like, man, like you guys didn't quite get this one right, but I like it still.
To be fair, I don't think they've had, aside from like the Pathless, I don't think any other games really has any sort of like fights like that.
No.
So,
and like, I never played the Pathless, but in like Journey, you are just avoiding something mm-hmm. at certain points. And I think in Abzu that they worked on also, like this game does have like notes of Abzu in it.
Yeah.
That game didn't really have anything threatening to you. So
there's like one section, yeah. I think, and that's it, like halfway through the game where you have to like, it's almost like a stealth section or something. But other than that, I don't remember really any enemies.
Did mention development and stuff, like Giant Squid does have a history of making games like this, especially Matt Nava, who started the studio. He used to work at that game company, and you know, they did, as we said, they made Journey, Flower, and Flow. You know, it feels like this game is almost like they said, okay, we made this game, let's throw in a lot of elements from a bunch of our other games and then one new idea. And it seems like that's what they do with all of their games. They take everything they've made and they say, let's throw in this new idea. So what were some of like the elements that you saw from their past games in here? We keep talking about the Pathless. I haven't played the Pathless. So Gary, have you played the Pathless?
No, I think I played the very beginning one time. I like rented it from Gamefly, I think shortly after it came out.
Yeah.
And then I was in this like weird state of mind where I'm like, I don't really want to start this game right now. And I just sent it back after like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I bought it digitally on sale. Yeah. It's on my to-do list at some point, but I haven't played it really.
Yeah. I keep looking at it and thinking like, well, I should try that because I like their past games.
Yeah, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah. And then like I unknowingly skipped over it and started with Sword of the Sea mm-hmm. because like, okay, well I'll play this one. But I feel like the Pathless is one of those where it's like I keep looking at it and thinking like, yeah, I could try that.
Mm-hmm.
But I see a lot of Journey reflected in this game when it comes to especially like sailing across the sand.
Yeah.
The music feels like something out of Journey. Also a lot of Abzu where it is very water. Much like ocean themed.
Yeah.
And there's like sea animals everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Once you restore water to the area, Max, like what kinds of elements do you see from previous games here?
Probably should have said this at the top. I haven't played any of their back catalog.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Did you say they made Flow?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I played that one when it came out, like back on a PS3,
okay.
But I don't have much memory of it at all. So, yeah, you're going to have to go over me for this one.
Okay, well, there are like certain musical notes even that I recognize from Flo here, where it's like, oh, I kind of know that particular like theme or that particular chord. And then I had to think like, well, wait, no, that was from the Jellyfish section of Flo. Really, really interesting.
Oh, dang.
But yeah.
Deep cut.
And Austin Wintory, the audio director for Sword of the Sea, has said that like the Jellyfish section was like his humorous inspiration or like his humorous like spin on the rest of that soundtrack. So like he's been in audio game design and stuff like for decades. But even then, like I look back and it's like, yeah, that was the first game of this type that I've ever played. And the DNA is still there from Flo way back in the day. Like we touched on Flower, like it kind of feels like you're changing the world, and that's the element of Flower that I see here. Is there anything else that feels like their past games in here?
I mean,
if not, like
from what I know about the Pathless, I haven't, like I said, I haven't really played it much, but the sense of speed you get and the fact that one thing I do remember from the very beginning of the game, you have to like. So you're like running around, and I think you're running around. I don't think you're riding on anything. That could be wrong, but and you have a bow, and you have to like shoot these things throughout the area. And if you chain them together, it makes you run faster. And I feel like they definitely took some of that to put in Sword of the Sea. Like when you're collecting those little orbs from the towers, and they basically let you go faster, and you can kind of chain them. I think they definitely took that from the Pathless for sure.
And then this game is fantastic for subsequent playthroughs, because on your second playthrough, if you pull off tricks, you get the same speed.
I love that.
And you can use it.
I was flying through the game with this speed run. I was like, damn, that's hella fast.
That made the game so much more fun.
Yeah.
And like the second playthrough is definitely worth it. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the speed run. We should talk about that. First of all, like rough estimate, like what was your speed run time? Do you think?
Oh shit! Oh, I can't even remember.
I can tell you mine. Mine was 1 hour 13 minutes.
Nice. Yeah.
What was the? You had to do under 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to say I did it in like an hour. I was flying.
Wow.
Yeah. Like I was. Jeez, I was like surprised. Yeah. I was like, because I didn't. Because at that point I knew where to go, and I was like, damn. Yeah. Like I didn't think I'd be able to finish it that fast.
I was quite surprised, actually. Yeah. My first blind playthrough where I wasn't focusing on anything apart from the story itself, I finished the game in 2 hours 31 minutes and thought I saw loads.
Wow, that is
not too bad, actually. Yeah,
I thought I was taking my time, really fast. Apparently I wasn't.
Yeah. I really took my time. My time was like around 5 hours.
Damn.
But I'm the type of person that will like go and explore every nook and cranny that I can find.
That's the thing. I felt like I was doing that.
Yeah.
It's just not very well.
That's amazing. Wow. My end time was around an hour and 20, I think. But I did it all in one sitting, and I knew exactly where I was going. So it felt like I was just like flying through it too. And I was having a great time with this, and I'm starting to realize that I love speed run trophies that are not skill based.
Yeah.
But more about memory.
Me too.
And like, if you can remember where to go and what to do as fast as you can, I like games like that.
Every Resident Evil.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not good at those because like, they're longer, and I'm bad at remembering like, oh, where was this room? Where was this thing? You know what I mean? Like,
at least with this one is like a little bit more linear. Yeah. You got right sometimes, but it's basically just point A to B.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the timing is much more forgiving.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, 100%. I thought the speed run trophy really like shined through when you got to I think it's the Frozen Drifts. Some of these like ice ramps and
these
mountains, and just you're flying down these at like over 200 miles an hour.
Yeah.
It's so satisfying. every time you go up these big jumps, I'm thinking back to that 2 Extreme game. It's like, get some air!
Yeah. And then there were the trick sections, which just they felt the most like the Tony Hawk games out of all of this.
Yeah.
Like I had so much fun jumping in and just riding around and trying to chain together tricks. And the goal was like to get 10,000 points at least. And I did that on my first try in every single
round. Yeah. I feel like they were almost too easy. I feel like they probably weren't going for difficulty, but I was like, I got 10,000 in the first like 10 seconds. Like, just jumping around and just chaining tricks together. But I mean, I'm kind of glad they didn't go crazy with it because it probably would have been annoying.
I beat that high score times 7.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. The first one I found in my first playthrough, I was just kind of like, well, I'll give this a try. And, you know, it had the sections with like wall riding that you could do. And so I like chained it together. And yeah, like you said, in the first 10 seconds I got, I was like, well, that was way too easy. They have to be harder later on, right?
And they're like the same.
They're really good. Yeah. They're even a little easier later on where they have the jellyfish pop up and you're supposed to like bounce around on the jellyfish.
Yeah, because the jellyfish
just allow you to. Yeah. And then you just chain the combo everywhere because you're not technically landing on the ground anywhere. So you just keep going.
That's how I cheese the combo trophies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was one where I was just like, I got to a point where there are two jellyfish right next to each other. And I said, well, I wonder how big of a combo I can really get. And without even trying, I got like a 30 trick combo and got that trophy to pop. And I was like, well, okay, I guess that was a trophy for that one. I was just seeing how long it could bounce.
Yeah. This is like the best ways to earn trophies. I feel like when you're just like, mm-hmm. That was a thing, you know?
Yeah.
Organically.
Oh, okay. So, growing up, like I wasn't into the Tony Hawk games. I was more of an SSX kind of guy. And this felt like a mix between what I think the Tony Hawk games were like and SSX.
Yeah. Where,
you know, this feels like you're riding a snowboard down certain parts of a hill or something. But also like the way they implement the tricks is based on the face buttons rather than like in SSX where they're based on the shoulder buttons. So this one, it kind of gives me the confidence. It's like, maybe I could get into the Tony Hawk games. Mm. And like, I just couldn't figure out the tricks back in the day, but now I think I could do it. So
sort of the sea, this one, sort of the sea was your gateway drug.
Yeah. It's a gateway to Tony Hawk.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. Now I was thinking, I want to ask this on every episode, but like, who do you think should try Sword of the Sea? Who do you recommend it to? Gary, I'll throw to you first.
Honestly, like anybody. I know that's kind of a cop-out answer, but maybe specifically people who are more into like interactive experiences that don't require tons of challenge in their game to get enjoyment out of it. Obviously the game isn't really challenging whatsoever, but it's kind of more about just the experience and experiencing the art and the, you know, the music and just, you know, the quote unquote story. I would say everybody, but obviously there's going to be that group of people that have to have their challenges and stuff like that. It's probably not necessarily for them, but for everybody else, I think it's at least worth trying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, especially if you like Journey and that kind of stuff, because it gives off heavy Journey vibes for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very good, like, weekend kind of game, I feel like, where you can just relax and play through it over the course of a weekend and enjoy it. And if you want to go back and get the collectibles, they're pretty easy to find. There are some that are probably going to require a guide. I wouldn't recommend like taking a guide the first time through. It's better to just experience cold.
Yeah, sure.
And like go in
and
like see it. But Max, what about you? Who do you recommend this game to?
Again, I kind of agree with Gary, like, as a bit of a cop-out answer, but absolutely anybody can play this. It's an appetizer, it's a weekend game, it's just perfect, like, sort of palate cleanser. If you've played a couple of tough games and you just want something quick and easy to play, this one is a total recommend. I'd be interested to see what younger children might think of this game, sort of around like their 8 to 12 age.
Yeah.
Get them off Fortnite.
Yeah.
See what they think of this game.
They're probably like, this is boring.
Where's Master Chief? I want Master Chief on the sword.
Why can't I floss in this?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Great answer. Because I feel like my niece might be interested in this kind of thing, but you know, she's kind of getting into that age where she's more interested in pop culture now. So like, she might find this to be a bit too like not boring, but I don't know, mundane per se. Like not as big and bombastic as other things. But I did give her Untitled Goose Game for her birthday last year, and she loved it. So
yeah,
you know, maybe she. She might like
this. Yeah, I think it could be a good gateway for younger children. I mean, you can't actually fail at this game. And even if they just end up riding around the sand dunes just doing jumps and occasional tricks every now and then, I think it would keep them happy.
Yeah.
And just the visuals, I think, would be good for younger kids, too, because it's like kind of the you know what I mean? Like, they'd be very engaged, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, Ray.
And then
Ray, if you're listening to this, put it on for your son. Had to plug him. So,
speaking of like other games and like games that like you could show to somebody, what other games can you think of that stand as like great art pieces?
Tough question.
Like one that I definitely think of right off the bat is Shadow of the Colossus, where I could say like, well, like this is a piece of art that in addition to being a video game.
The only argument I would make with that is the challenge level.
Yeah.
There's
a piece of challenge to it.
100%. Yeah. But I mean, if people aren't afraid of a challenge, I 100% agree with you on that because it definitely has like a whole vibe to it.
Yeah. Anything else that's made by Giant Squid or that game company is like arguably artistic and definitely falls into that art house kind of thing. And I feel like the further back you get in their history, the more artistic they get too. Where like, if you go all the way back to Flow, it's going to be like, what is this? This is just like a weird animation thing that you can play around with. And there are like levels of like it being a game to it, but still there, it's not really that clear that it is a game per se. Same with like Flower. It is a little bit more of a video game, but still like it is kind of like, well, what are you accomplishing here? There is not really much to accomplish rather than like finishing all of the changes that is intended to be done in the area. That's it.
I would say the only games that really come to mind in like recent memory would be obviously other than the, you know, the back catalog of games that this developer has made. Gree, I feel like is a pretty good, like artistic.
Yeah.
Game.
Good pull. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's got, and it's got kind of a heavier story if you like kind of really pay attention, which, you know, some people really like too. That and it's got more challenge to it, but Okami is like, I never finished it, but it's up there for like favorite games for me, just based on art style and just like, just pure charm.
Yeah. Yeah. And that one, especially in terms of like, it's like picturesque areas and vistas, like,
yeah,
it's specific art style too. Like everything looks painting. Like it's hand painted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous.
Games with unusual art styles, I would always think of Oddworld Abe's Odyssey.
Yeah. I can see that.
I know there's a bit of recency bias because I have been playing the Oddworld games recently, but Kevin, I know you recently played it, so I'm wondering if you would agree with that.
Yeah, it has definitely got a specific like feeling to it. And you know, the story itself is not that abstract. Like, it is very straightforward. Mm. But, you know, the style in which you're presented with everything is very unique.
Yeah. But that,
I need to play that. Like, I played them as a kid, but they were so hard for me as a kid that I never really, like, actually finished them. Yeah. But now I don't have an excuse.
Yeah. Another one that I think of. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, the only other game that sort of comes to mind when I think about some, it's not necessarily similar, but kind of is Immortals Fenyx Rising.
Oh, okay.
I kind of feel like it's got a similar kind of like sort of colorful, cartoony, not quite cartoony vibe to see.
It's even almost like
it's kind of just Assassin's Creed like reskins.
I was just gonna say that.
Simple, but
yeah, it's like a gentler Assassin's Creed, I guess you could call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember that one. Was that one by Ubisoft?
Yes.
And that came out, and everyone was saying like, "Oh, it's Ubisoft's like Breath of the Wild." And
yeah,
I was curious about it. So
I really enjoyed it. I wish that they had stuck with it.
Yeah, yeah. Other ones that I could think of are it is absolutely not the same style as Sword of the Sea, but Valiant Hearts is totally one of those pieces. It's like, hey, this is a piece of art that anyone could like observe and enjoy as like something very different. Yeah. It feels like that's one game that I think is still on extra that I'm like, okay, I want to talk to somebody about this, because this is like if Ken Burns started a game studio and made a game and like, that's the only way that I can describe it, but it is an amazing art piece that I think anybody should experience in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the recommendations that I have. Are there any games that you're just playing right now that you'd want to recommend? Or they don't even have to be games. They could be like books. They could be movies, TV shows, whatever. Because this is a book club style game, recommend something else that people should jump into.
Gary, why don't you go? I'm just pulling up.
Let me see. What am I playing right now? I've kind of been on the Silent Hill wagon recently. I know Spooktober is already over, but you know, it's never too late to experience horror games. The first I basically recently played through the first two Silent Hills, like the OG PlayStation 1 and then PlayStation 2, mm-hmm. and they're so good. The atmosphere in those games is so good. I haven't played the remake for 2 yet, but from what I hear, the original and the remake are two very different experiences. Because they added so much content in the remake too. So, I'm going to say the Silent Hill games. I mean, really probably any of them up to 4. And then I've heard F is good too. After that, mileage may vary, but, I mean, like I said, it's never too late. I know Spooktober already passed, but it's never too late for horror games.
No. And Silent Hill is another one of those games, especially Silent Hill 2 is one of those where I look at it and I think like, well, this is some amazing tech here. Like what they thought to do with fog was incredible, with like how it becomes so thick and so much of like a texture that you start to wonder if like what you're seeing in the distance is a monster or just a wisp of fog.
Mm-hmm.
And like that's what got me the first time I played it. Back on PS2, I thought that was amazing.
Well, really,
and they didn't really seem to do that kind of thing again.
Yeah. Well, and from what I've played so far, I've only played the first two, but it almost, since Silent Hill is like the constant in these games, it almost kind of makes it a character of its own, because they add so much lore and backstory. And the fact that once you've played a few games, you're kind of like, oh shit, we're going to Silent Hill. You know what I mean? Like you kind of know what to expect. So that's one thing I really appreciate about those games too. It's like it almost like gives you anxiety just thinking about, all right, we're going to Silent Hill. You know, this is happening again. But those
go to the dead town.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Max, is there anything you want to recommend?
In regards to Spooktober, I was kind of on the hype train for Resident Evil 2, and I think I've got up to like the first boss, or I've just beaten him, and I'm not really vibing with it the same way I was vibing with Resident Evil 7, because I've been thinking about that game all year. I was like, yeah, I'm going to get back to Resident Evil and during Spooktober, and I think I've just kind of let myself down a little bit with it, so I've kind of dropped it. Sorry, Colin. So
as long as it's not RE1 remake, you won't hurt
feelings. The only two games I'm really playing at the moment is BioShock Infinite for a bit of research, which I'm playing on my PS3. And I'm also playing Need for Speed Heat.
Oh, that is like that one is the one Need for Speed that I've played recently, and it is amazingly good.
Yeah,
like that is the closest that we would get to a Burnout Paradise.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, you have my attention.
That we can.
Yeah, it's
Burnout games are my favorite.
It's very close to being a Burnout Paradise game. But I'm enjoying it so far. The story's a little bit whatever. I was just like, I couldn't really care. But it's got like that sort of that checkbox kind of energy that I'm looking for at the moment. Nothing's missable, so I can sort of just play the game how I want and just drive around in fast cars, man.
It's developed by Criterion, like the Burnout games, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think that's probably why it gives off that vibe. They kind of... I'm gonna have to check that one out. I love the Burnout games.
It's just a little bit funny. I've got to mention this. So I was like driving down this road at like 170 miles an hour, sort of end up flying off the road and into this digger. And I'm thinking to myself, well, the car's not going to survive this. And the digger just ended up splitting in half, and the car was completely undamaged. So I'm not quite sure what the rules are in this game, but you know, it was fine.
Yeah. I also love the paint job system that they have in that game, where you can apply different decals and stuff to that. Oh, yeah. I ended up like coming up with like names for each of my cars, and then just like using the decal stickers to like as like the name for all of my cars, and the decals that they have in there are all past Need for Speed games. So you know, there was one car that I named Carbon, there was another car that I named Heat, there was a car in there that was named High Stakes or Razor. I really got into just like the custom paint jobs of that game, and like I would like add other decals to make them look really cool and artistic. It was just a ton of fun. There was another one of my favorites was just the Riot Club, and I had like somebody throwing a flare like on the side of the car, so it looked awesome. I loved it. Yeah. All right. Well, as far as recommendations go, I've just got one, and that's going to be for next month. We are going to be talking about Blueprints. And the reason why is because a couple of months ago, I think it was at the beginning of October. And once every 3 months, I jump into the Trophy Talk Discord and I have everyone vote on what game we are going to play. There was a 3-way tie between Sword of the Sea, The Rogue Prince of Persia, and Blueprints. And so I'm going to see if we can find time to talk about all three of these games, but Blueprints is going to be up next. And this game, we're not expecting anybody to platinum it, but you are going to be welcome to write in to just talk about this game if you've played it.
Isn't it like hard as hell?
Yeah, it is. I've been playing it for about, I think, maybe a month and a half now. Uh-huh. And I can say I'm like halfway through the end game stuff, but there are tons of other things to do that I'm probably not going to do.
5 out of 10, 80 hours, dear Lord.
Yeah. It is fascinating in certain ways and frustrating in others. I'm looking forward to talking about it though. So you could jump in and check it out. Wouldn't recommend going for the trophies though. If you're at all like worried about your completion percentage on PlayStation, jump into Xbox and play it on Game Pass. But it is still really good, especially if you like games like The Witness or Myst, like kind of those games that really make you think and force you to have a notepad next to you. But that one is going to be next month. So either one of you know anything about Blueprints?
I've just heard it's a possible game of the year for a lot of people.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. And that's one reason I started playing it, because I was thinking like, well, I want to find out why. Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, if it's that good, I'm tempted to like at least play through the story once just to experience it. But there ain't no way in hell I'm going for the plat.
Mm-hmm. No. I would not recommend it. I do not expect to have all of the trophies earned by the end of next month or even like by the time we record at some point in December. But still, it's one of those where like I feel very accomplished anytime I figure something out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it is very cool to like discover something new. So also like one of those weird, like not an art piece kind of thing, but one of those very interesting like mysteries that you can kind of uncover if you've got the time and the luck, because really there's a lot of luck involved in this game. So Max, remind us where people can find you and the content that's coming up soon.
Yes, you can find both me and myself. Me and myself. Me, me and my co-host. Yeah, there is two of me.
Nice.
So you can find me and my co-host Zach at the Mooglecast, which is part of the Trophy Talk Network. There we talk about a variety of video game related topics, and we usually have a revolving guest chair. And obviously, for this month, November, you're going to be in the guest chair, Kevin. So we're going to be talking about BioShock, a retrospective, and we'll be talking about what we've been playing and some other random rubbish. So please give us a listen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I feel like I could give a TED talk about just the story of the first BioShock.
I'm quite happy for you to lead the episode.
Yeah.
I've got a busy week.
We'll see what happens. and I got to familiarize myself with my notes. Gary, what is going on with you? And where can people find you?
So I brought it up at the beginning, but I'll bring it up again. The Platinum Achievements podcast, me and my co-host Smackerly is in the Discord, Trophy Talk Discord. Real name is Ray. We have like a topic each week we'll talk about, whether it be tied to something going on in the gaming community or just something that we're currently interested in, and then we'll usually talk about what we've been playing. There's a lot of rambling going on.
Does he have a rant about Halo?
No.
Oh.
Well, you know, I'll take that back. In the most recent episode, he does bring it up. he does bring up the what happened in the Discord with the whole bet or whatever that I completely forgot about. But
oh, right.
Just rant a little bit about that, but
worming his way out of things, man.
I know, right? You can find me on pretty much any gaming platform at the Sly G Cooper on Xbox. It's just Sly G Cooper, no the. Send me a friend invite, message, whatever. I'm usually always playing something. I'm down to play online. I'm down to chat. I'm down for whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, thank you very much for taking some time to be with me this morning. Max, thank you also. Thank you for taking some time out of your evening to talk about Sword of the Sea. This has been a great episode. And I have just now finished my coffee, so this is great
timing.
I hope you guys have a great day, and please remember to be excellent to each other. Thank you. Nice.